This Steve Jones Show podcast is now loading. The Steve Jones Show podcast is presented by Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, and NIL Game Changers. Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, and Sunbury Motor Company. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors Studio Mobile in Daytona today. Penn State Clemson this afternoon at 4. I'm beginning at 3:30 from the Ocean Center. Arena number 156 in the career. Dick and I keep track of these things. And this half hour brought to you by, look, it's the holidays are here. And tailgating. Huh. How about that? That means Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket, imports, domestics, microbrews, the best selection of beer anywhere, wine coolers, water, soft drink, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and out every day. And the pickle bar, led by the two favorites, the Barrels and the Dills, indeed second to none, all the Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street and Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Thankful for all the weeks and all the years we've had the outstanding Neil Coulong on. Sir, welcome. Happy Thanksgiving to you and your family.
Happy Thanksgiving to you guys as well. As always, though, it is my pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
I felt like the Cleveland Steeler game last week set the tone for the entire NFL weekend. What did you think?
That's a good way to put it. Weather gets cold, offense kind of dies off. I think that in a game in which the Steelers had all momentum, it kind of seems like Cleveland is falling off again to kind of a place that they're used to, another disappointing year. It ended exactly the way that we should have figured that it was going to end, simply because Pittsburgh can't win on Thursday nights on the road within the division, certainly not in Cleveland. And it was a problem early. It was a problem late. The things that are going to doom this team came out in pretty clear and pretty quick order. Whatever it is, my opinion, I know that this isn't a popular one, but my opinion, the thing that nobody's really talking about is the lack of production coming from T.J. Watt. Yeah. And you're seeing what a Steelers team without T.J. Watt might have looked like for the last 4 or 5 years. The lack of big plays. And I'm not saying that he's, you know, nothing out there, but they've needed him to make big plays and big moments. His ability to do that makes him above anybody else on the defensive side of the ball, in my opinion, for his generation, a first ballot Hall of Famer. And with that, it's become problematic for a team that is still going to struggle to figure out how to consistently move the ball, how to consistently put up points with an offense with really only one playmaker, and you're really not sure what that playmaker is going to do one snap to the next. So yeah. The maddening inconsistencies on offense, that will continue. That's going to be an issue. If the defense is not helping them out at the end, if they're not playing high-end defensive football, they're probably going to lose, which is really what happened. You know, the offense gives them a chance. After the defense gets the ball back, you think things are moving in the fourth quarter, and the defense just promptly let Cleveland walk down the field and take the game away. A game that I'm not sure you could say, you know, entirely that they clearly won anyway, but the issues that we saw defensively at the end create a muddied enough picture that, you know, we're not entirely sure if this team is more like what we saw on Thursday night in big asterisk on that. It is a Thursday night game, division game after a Ravens game on the road. I don't care if you go cross country or 100 miles down the road. Very difficult to be in that situation. Or it's the team that we saw go on a five-game winning streak amid offensive changes and improvements in that side.
Let me ask you about Justin Fields for a moment. There's no question that between the 20s, you feel like, for the most part, Russell Wilson could move the team better. Should the Steelers, in your opinion, I'm just spitballing here, consider a couple of packages of Fields in the red zone because you have to account for him?
Here's the fundamental issue that I have with that, and it really has nothing to do with Justin Fields. If you're able to produce in the short area as an offense, the level of play from your quarterback should be mitigated by other factors that are there, right? It's short space. It's quick. It's rhythm. It's timing. For whatever reason, the offensive line cannot block forward for half a yard to save its life right now. Running backs do not find anything that helps them fall forward. The quarterback is probably aware of the lack of playmakers running patterns, whether it's in the red zone or at midfield. They fall apart within the short area, within the red area. They call it the red area now for some reason. I don't really understand that. But you're not able to throw the ball successfully into the end zone. They can't run in short yardage for anything. Those safeties have to be 20 yards off the line for the Steelers' offensive line to get anything of a push up front. And all of that is coming down to wreck anything that they're trying to do in situational football. Now, is it an option to bring in Fields? Sure. Sure. You know, I don't see any problem with that. I don't know, certainly not from what we saw on Thursday, which they tried Justin Fields in a couple short yardage situations. I don't know why that would be any different, particularly in the red zone. That's not to say that it couldn't work because, you know, they need to change something. Something's going to have to get fixed if they're going to have any chance this season. If that is something that they feel would give them an advantage, I'm sure they'll do it. My guess is the focus is going to be on the litany of other problems that aren't Russell Wilson. Now, if you want to go back to the red zone interception that Wilson threw against Baltimore, we can go for a while, the stupidity of that play. I don't see Fields making that type of decision on the field. But if Fields is running in something designed that they plan for him, he needs to get the ball and run. The running backs getting the ball under center, they need to find a spot and go. All of them are dancing. They're taking too long in the backfield to find where it is that they want to go. And one part of that is because there isn't anything there. You're seeing the interior of their offensive line, which executes really well horizontally in zone, but they're not doing anything in gap or in power to move a pile forward. Because of that, shutting down the run game, because the run game is shut down without a whole lot of extra effort from the defense, there's not really anything that they're worried about from a passing end, which is where I would think Fields would struggle unless it's some type of motion-based rollout where you're going to drag a receiver along with him, and he's going to take a couple steps, throw a rhythm pass to a spot where the receiver is going to be. If they can execute all of that, and Fields is the guy that does that better than Wilson, great, get him in there. I'm just not entirely sure that that's really what the problem here is. It can give them something for sure, but they've got to block a lot better. They've got to scheme a lot better. There are a lot of issues that are dragging the entire unit down that are not related to just Russell Wilson. And because of that, I don't think are necessarily concurrently improved with Justin Fields in there.
Back to T.J. Watt for a moment. When you've watched him, why surprisingly ineffective?
A lot of theories. You know, I think if I was to guess, and I hate doing this, I hate the internet doctors, people that try to diagnose things, watching it and not examining anybody. I'm far from a medical professional, but I wouldn't be at all surprised to hear that he's playing hurt. He's playing with something.
Okay.
You're seeing the explosive ability here and there, but it's not consistent. add in the fact, and this is something that you don't necessarily see right away as a casual viewer within a broadcast angle, but Watt is playing wide nine far more often than he's playing a seven technique. In other words, he's out wide of the tight end. The Steelers do that often with Watt because they're trying to disrupt that swing pass to make a quarterback see Watt out in that space and to give Watt some space to be able to use that explosion, whether it's to make the play in the backfield, whether it's to pick up somebody in coverage, or to just get a better angle on what would probably be a tight end, a lesser, you know, inclined blocking player on the outside. If Watt is hurt, if he's not, you know, that explosion isn't quite there, he's not going to land, and he hasn't been. So what teams do to stop a wide nine defender from blocking is they don't both go after him in a double team sense and try to outflank him to get both shoulders. What they do is line him up vertically. In other words, you get through one, then get through the other, which incidentally, when everybody tells you that TJ Watt is never double teamed, that isn't counted as a double team. So go figure. Point is, Watt has to still beat two guys, but he's not getting through that the way he used to. The last couple games, he has not done that. Obviously, you don't get through on every single play, but Watt beats that eventually and gets at least close to the quarterback eventually. He didn't do that at all against Cleveland. Cleveland got rid of the ball pretty quickly, and good on them for doing that, and that could be a factor with this as well. But overall, I wouldn't be surprised if he was playing hurt, but I'd be remiss if I didn't point out the fact that TJ Watt has been playing Hercules-level snaps for this team since the start of his career, and he's not a kid anymore. He's been playing for a really long time. That's a lot of hits. That's a lot blindside crackback blocks, running square head first into the running back. It's going to wear you down eventually. Now, in full disclosure, I predicted that 2 years ago, and he played at a defensive player of the year level in those seasons. Yeah. I'm not saying that he's done or anything, but at some point, the wear and tear is going to catch up to him. And he's not, when he loses that explosion, he's not going to be the guy making game-changing plays week in and week out. And if he's not, and that's the most unfair standard that's ever been put on a football player.
Right.
But if he's not, this is a completely mediocre team at best.
Yeah.
And probably a lot worse than that most games.
Mm. All right, so now you got to bounce back. And you've got to figure out a way to bounce back. And the schedule is turned not in their favor, because, I mean, I've got some of their more difficult games are on the horizon here, Neil.
Yeah, in Cincinnati on the road, when we first looked at the schedule, you think, okay, Cleveland on a Thursday after a Ravens game, that's tough. But a mini bye after your bye week to get ready for Cincinnati on the road, this is probably where you'd want that to be. That said, Cincinnati, I think, has underachieved quite a bit this season. They're a much better team than 4-7. And on top of that, somebody can look this up and prove me right or wrong, but the Steelers don't do well against Joe Burrow if it's not week one of the season. They can beat a Cincinnati team that isn't starting Joe Burrow, and they have a couple times, or they could beat the week one imposter Joe Burrow. But in the middle of the year, if Burrow is playing and he's healthy, he shredded them. We're talking 37 points, and it would not surprise me if that's the type of offense that you're going to see going against Pittsburgh's defense on Sunday. And it's a great offensive team. They're not very good defensively, so you're looking at really what should be strength versus strength on one side of the ball. You're giving the edge to Cincinnati in that, but Pittsburgh's offense is going to have to score points in this game. You know, they can't continue to rack up one carry, zero carry plays and drives, setting up third and long, and inch their way down the field. They're going to have to hit big somewhere, and some of that is going to have to be George Pickens making plays, not just deep outside the sideline, but in the middle of the field, high percentage throws that they can hit consistently, and plays that doesn't result with him, you know, enacting WWE moves against the cornerback. That's drawing the league's attention, by the way. Wouldn't at all surprise me if we start hearing the word suspension associated with him. They keep finding him, and it doesn't seem to change what he's doing. They're going to have to find a way to manufacture bigger plays on the field more consistently. And the way to do that is not keep throwing the ball deep to Pickens. they're going to have to find a way to do it underneath. And we saw some things. Wilson has definitely improved that. But a better running game and a more consistent, more explosive, shorter pass game is what they're going to have to do against Cincinnati, because you cannot count on this defense to hold Cincinnati to 17 points. It's not going to happen. So it's a real tough opponent. They've got a lot of those the rest of the way. This is the meat of the schedule. You know, we were excited at 8-2, but this isn't a team that was going to win 13 games. They're going to have to find a way to get to 10, maybe 11, with what they have left. And it's going to have to start in Cincinnati.
Yeah, no question about that. What was your just general thought on the weekend in the league, and did anybody emerge better for it besides the Philadelphias and the Detroits of the world, who are a cut above everybody?
Yeah, I'll tell you what, I'm sick of betting against Philadelphia. I've had it. They proved it to me. I was stubborn about that, but Nick Sirianni's done a great job there.
Yeah,
good. That was with his job on the line. You know, I think I said this last week as well. It might be the best line I've ever heard mentioned in the media. Ryan Clark said this. Detroit's beating teams like they just paid them $1.2 million to show up and play for their homecoming. Detroit's just they're firing on all cylinders. Yeah. Really good team. But the team that I watched is probably not a surprise to you. But Minnesota, I thought, played really well. Again, a balanced team. Let's be honest, some fluky things happened at the end of the Chicago game. They handle business the way that they need to. Playing in Chicago hasn't been the easiest thing for them, but you know, you're seeing, you're getting excellent play all around. Sam Darnold probably should be playing a lot worse at this point in the season. I think everybody expected that. It seems in a lot of ways he's getting better. That's going to be a tough team to beat. But that I watched the Dallas Washington ending. Still can't believe what happened at the end of that game.
Yeah,
I haven't seen two teams take defeat away from the jaws of victory in consecutive plays like that, the way that we had just seen it. You got a feel for Carolina against Kansas City. Kansas City, again, they're a team that knows how to win football games, and they're not going to blow the doors off anybody, but they're going to make the plays when they have to make the plays. Defensively, they didn't get it done. I thought Bryce Young played very well, but when they needed it, Mahomes is hitting Kelce for 17 yards on second and long, set up a chip shot field goal. They probably could have scored a touchdown on that drive. When the game is on the line, Kansas City, far more often than not, is getting it done. It's just a really tough team to play. Buffalo, it took a lot for Buffalo, also an excellent team, to beat them last week. And Kansas City, I don't think is impressing anybody from a fantasy football perspective, but they're playing outstanding situational football. I think these playoffs are going to be good. I think both conferences have got really intriguing matchups, certainly in the top three and four, to kind of lay this out for what I think will be a highly competitive playoff run this year.
Okay, so how did you spend Thanksgiving?
We play football, believe it or not, at my age. We're still doing this.
It's awesome.
I thought this would be it. No, we want to do it again. So if I am alive, we'll go to my mom's house, have Thanksgiving lunch there. We're early. The rest of the family's kind of out for their in-law stuff by the afternoon. And I probably fall asleep watching football like, you know, two-thirds of America does, ignoring the work that I need to do. But, yeah, the football game, hang out, eat pretty quickly after that, later in the morning, and, you know, right in time for a noon kickoff here in the Central Time.
Sounds like a lot of fun. You told me last year you're going to play football, and you weren't sure it was going to be your last. I'm glad you're playing again this year. I think that's so cool.
I honestly didn't think we would. I didn't think we were going to again. Then it was like, okay, it's too late. I just committed to it, and I didn't even realize it. So we'll mark it down again. This one, I'm much more certain this is our last one. I'm giving you the Brett Favre retirement conversation already.
All right, I'm prepared for it. I'm also prepared that you make one last comeback like Brett Favre.
So, I'm not going to say no, let's be honest.
I know you're not. Hey, look, believe me, if I were out there, I'd join you.
Yeah, hey, invite's there. Penn State's coming to Minnesota. Come on out. We'll get you to play.
Yeah, I mean, I could play tight end. I'd be all right. You know, so you know, Penn State seems to have a pretty good tight end this year. I watched all his moves. All right.
No, studied the film. You're ready to go.
Neil, happy Thanksgiving to you and yours. Enjoy the game. Enjoy the weekend. With our great thanks for the fact you're here all the time.
Absolutely. Thanks to you guys. Have a great holiday.
You too. We'll come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
The holidays are filled with traditions. Why not start a new one this year by getting up to an additional $1,000 off a new Kia? It's the Kia Season of New Traditions sales event at Sunbury Motors Kia. Hurry in to Sunbury Motors Kia for exceptional holiday deals on all the popular Kias. And get up to $1,000 additional off on select models. 2024 Kia Sorentos have 0% financing for 48 months and start as low as $28,495. 2025 Sorentos have 1.9% for 60 months. And there's 16 to choose from. 2025 Kia Sportages have 1.9% financing for 60 months and start under 30 grand with 24 on the lot. And there's 21, 2024, and 2025 all-wheel drive Kia Tellurides starting at just $39,995. Celebrate the holidays during the Kia Season of New Traditions sales event at Sunbury Motors Kia on the Strip in Hummel's Wharf.
For details, see dealer or go to Kia.com.